The Summit County Council meets Wednesday to discuss the 2019 work plan, the Canyon's transportation master plan, and more. So joining us with a preview is Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Emily.
Glad to have you in here.
Thank you.
So before we get into the agenda, I'm wondering if you have any more information on the reported white nationalist cars at the county's recent demolition derby.
There's really not more to talk about there. I mean, that we know it happened, and we've got the fair ended this past Saturday. With a successful 2 days of rodeo and the livestock sale and the parade. We've got a full year before the next fair happens. And as we've already talked about, we will be looking at the contracts associated with the demolition derby event and all our events, because this could happen at anything that the county sponsors, whether it's at the fair or anything that the county is involved in. So we've got to look at that in regard and with the contractor to look at and see if there's anything from other counties, other areas of the country that have dealt with these issues and how they've dealt with them to see what we want to do in this case. And we'll be bringing that back to council over the year for some discussion.
Okay, well, let's move to the agenda then. And Tom, you are first on the council's agenda with an update on the 2019 work plan. So first, what's notable in this plan?
Well, I mean, the work plan was an attempt towards the beginning of the year, an agreement between the council and myself on what staff will work on during the year. You know, certainly we go through a whole myriad of things that we budget for as we do the budget leading into a new fiscal year. But we really never articulate down to the detail of what it is the county is going to accomplish, both in those areas of the strategic plan and then a myriad of other things that are going on that may not be directly associated with the strategic plan. So this was an attempt to make that agreement so that we held firm to those commitments of things we were going to accomplish. And then if things came in, opportunities came in during the year to do other things, that we would examine that in the broader perspective of the work plan to see if we were overtaxing our staff, if we were stretching resources, or if we had to amend our budget to put other resources towards it. I planned on getting this back in front of the council in June or July, and those meetings just filled up, so we're now bringing that in front of them. Also bringing in front of the public just to update them on what we've been working on this year. And it's opportune because now we're starting on the budget for the next year. So it's kind of a discussion that says, this is what our progress has been. This is what we plan on finishing by the end of the year. What are multi-year projects that need to roll into the next budget year? And just to start to get those juices flowing about the next budget.
So just to be clear, this is a to-do list, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Informed by the budget.
That's correct.
Okay. So what have you accomplished so far?
Halfway through the year now. It's 10 pages of bulletized list and comments about all the things. You know, some highlights, the Jeremy Ranch Interchange, you know, we're full into the construction of that. With all of its associated pedestrian and bike amenities. You know, we're working heavily on with the Forest Service up in the Uintas to figure out if we can help bring some grant money, project money out of the federal government into some forest health issues. You know, we're just about to finish up a contract with the University of Utah mental health folks in order to continue providing those services in the community. So highlights like that, those are all things that kind of relate to our strategic plan, but there's a myriad of others. Some things we've already done, you know, the 150th anniversary of the Transcontinental Railroad being done. We did a celebration in the county around that earlier in the year. So those are examples, but again, it's a long list.
It must be really satisfying to cross those.
Well, it was a long thing to do. I wrote it this weekend, but it is. As we track that stuff, it is neat to mark stuff off the list.
So, as you're looking ahead to the next budget year, what needs to be put off to the next year?
Well, I mean, there's always multi-year projects. A lot of the the planning projects, if we're examining code, development code, or general plans, those are quite often multi-year projects. A lot of land acquisitions, either for open space or agricultural preservation, are multi-year projects. So those are the things that we compare and then feed those into the next budget.
So the council will also look at the Canyon's Transportation Master Plan. And in 2017, when that plan was reapproved, the goal was to reduce traffic in the Canyon's area by 27%, which is a really specific number. But now staff is recommending that the county change that goal.
Yeah, so if you take the development agreement all the way back into the early 2000s when it was originally done, this 27% number shows up in that development agreement. And it was, as far as current Canyon staff and current county staff can tell, it was probably a mix of science and some negotiation in order to do that. And what they basically discovered is that 27% reduction threshold still allowed the roads to fail. And intersections to fail, especially that intersection between 224 and Canyons Resort Drive. So, you know, great that there's a standard in the development agreement, but if it allows the roads to fail, then it really isn't doing what it needs to be doing. So that has been what the two staffs have been working on over the past 2 years in order to establish a new threshold. And that new threshold will be based on level of service targets that are in our code. They'll relate to that, and it will put a threshold in there that makes it so that the roads that we can approach fixing the roads before they fail.
So is this an easier metric to follow?
It's easier and more standard to the traffic world and the traffic engineering world. So it makes it easier for both sides to continue to understand that as years go by and as staff goes in and out of those positions.
And this kind of pertains to how long you have to wait at an intersection, right?
That's correct. So level of service, I think most people think of it as the number of lanes in a road and how many cars can be stacked in those lanes. But really, level of service in the traffic world is determined by the function of the intersections and whether they work or not.
So if we're talking about this particular intersection, does that mean that we're looking at adding lanes or widening?
Well, I mean, that is certainly one way to increase capacity is to widen intersections. But that might not be the preferred method. Right now, the level of service at Canyons Resort Drive and 224 doesn't warrant any more capacity. But, you know, you talk about the build out of the canyons, and it probably will at some point. That doesn't mean that it's going to be a much larger intersection. There's other engineering solutions that could come to that, or other access roads. White Pine Canyon Road was always, as part of the development agreement, was envisioned as being an access into the canyons as well. So there's other ways to deal with getting in and out of the canyons.
Well, and as you know, Park City is looking at the 248 project right now. A lot of pushback against widening that road, but really more of a focus on putting transit
yep.
first. So is that something the county's looking at?
Absolutely. In fact, you know, we work very closely with Park City on the transit system, and 224, we're marching down the path of doing projects in the future with UDOT on 224 that will be heavily transit focused. So that will be part of the overall solution for 224.
The council will also get an update on the operation policies for Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District to comply with House Bill 163, which is a law that was passed this year making the unauthorized personal use of public property illegal. So are there any particular issues that you're trying to address here? Is this just a code update?
It's really a reaction to a change in state law. The county put policies in place prior to July 1st, which accomplished the same thing, and our special service districts are doing the same to follow suit so that they fall and comply with the law as well.
Okay. Liberty Capital Lending is also on the agenda. It's the development company behind Silver Creek Village, which is the big project near the intersection of I-80 and Highway 40. The village plan includes some space given to the rec district, and earlier this summer they came to an agreement where the developers could use the rec district space to kind of store some non-hazardous material during construction. But according to the staff report, the planning department says there are some problems with the materials on the site. So what are these problems
here? So the
here?
Problems are is that they're actually it wasn't being used just for storage. They were actually doing some sorting of that material, taking out the big rocks and things like that from dirt, and then kind of running somewhat of a commercial operation and selling some of that stuff off, which happens around a lot of large construction projects when there's a lot of excavation going on. So it wasn't being used under the agreement they had. So all the parties have gotten together. They've talked about it. They're going to cease the activity, stop storing material there. And that's what the new access agreement, what it says.
How is it interfering with the trail easement? I read that in the report.
Well, I think I don't know specifically, but knowing the area just a little bit, I think some of the materials was actually covering the trail easement. So they have to obviously move that in order so people can access the trail.
So the last item on the agenda is a resolution adopting the Mountain Regional Water Special Services District Impact Fee Facilities Plan. Will the impact fee go up for users?
I believe so. I mean, the report that's being adopted or being considered for adoption this week doesn't actually set the impact fee. That comes in a subsequent analysis by Zions Bank, but this puts together all the information that supports what the fee is, and it's a combination of four different factors. Some of it being the projects that need to be done over the next 10 years in order to support the system and its growth, and it equals about $5 million worth of projects that will have to be done in order to meet that demand, and then the impact fee grows out of all of those factors. So this report really is the basis of the fee.
So that growth that you're talking about, the report shows that this is an interesting metric that I don't entirely understand. But in the next year, water district projects will grow by 124 equivalent residential connections every year. Is that 124 additional households?
No, it's not exactly that, because an equivalent residential connection is a single family house under 3,000 square feet equals one ERC.
Okay.
But say a condo under a certain size is going to be less than an ERC. A single family home that's above 3,000 square foot gets calculated above that one ERC. And then commercial properties have a whole other calculation associated with them. So it is rather complicated, but the math behind it is in the report about how they came to that 124 per year. And then, of course, over 10 years, that's 1,240 ERCs that they'll grow. So that's just one of the four factors that go into the impact fee.
So that's the general growth that we're expecting to see. So what kind of projects are planned to meet that growth?
Well, I mean, several. I mean, I can look down at the list. There's a Silver Creek Pipeline extension. There's a project in Glenwild, South Point. Summit Park, some pump capacity that needs to be increased. But generally, it has to do with water rights, water source, water storage, and distribution. Those are the four things that kind of the kinds of projects that are out there.
Will the council be getting into all of this at the meeting this
week?
Well,
they may. They've seen this once already, so this is more of a public hearing for the public to comment on that, as well as the Mountain Regional Water Board has gotten into this in a lot of detail.
Yeah, it was like a 70-page report,
and you haven't memorized
Tom.
It yet?
Yeah, I figured it all out. Don't worry. All right, Tom, I think we have to leave it there. Tom Fisher, Summit County Manager, thanks so much
for
joining us.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. The Park City Planning Commission has a big agenda Wednesday, including a review of the Deer Valley Resort parking plan and an expansion of the Park City Hospital. And here with a preview is Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Emily.
So the Planning Commission is taking a look at Deer Valley Resort's development agreement because this past winter, when we had a lot of snow, Deer Valley ended up exceeding the number of allowed days for parking on the street once the parking lots filled up. So what's in Deer Valley's development agreement when it comes to parking?
Well, that's exactly right. Back in the 1970s, the Planning Commission established a total available parking for skiing. In the 1990s, that was changed to saying if you exceed the parking quantity more than 10% of the skier days, then you've got to come back and talk to the Planning Commission about whether we need to build more parking or not. And so that's what the current development agreement says. And so Deer Valley has agreed to come back and have a conversation with the Planning Commission in a work session. But what we're listening for is Deer Valley's response to the City Council's focus on transit and trying to make sure the bus system works and trying to make sure we're taking care of the employees correctly. So it's not just about skier parking. So that's kind of what the conversation we're going to have. I think it's important to recognize that there are substantially more buses that deliver skiers to Park City Mountain Resort than deliver skiers to Deer Valley Resort. And there are no pure direct routes from anywhere to Deer Valley. You always have to go through the transit center. And so we're working collaboratively with Deer Valley to kind of rearrange that. We had high levels of success during the events when transit was allowed to kind of do a little different planning. So during the World Championships, transit worked really well, and we did not exceed parking. During the concert series, it appears that transit is delivering on their promises to Deer Valley. So we're just listening to Deer Valley and seeing what they want to do to serve their customers.
So we've heard a little bit from the neighbors who live in that area about how this impacts them. But is this more of a safety issue, or is it a convenience issue, or what?
Well, it's a couple of things. The idea on Deer Valley Drive was perhaps to allow parking on the street several times a year.
For the skiers.
For the skiers. It never considered the summer operations. Then when Deer Valley Drive was reconstructed and restriped, it tried to accommodate bike lanes. So now we're in this conflict between bikes and cars parked and what happens to the sidewalks and who plows the sidewalks. So we're trying to sort all the way back through that and try and come up with a solution that works for everybody. So we want to, one, make sure transit can get through. Two, we want to make sure emergency services can get through. And three, we want to make it safe for pedestrians to walk up to the base of the resort.
So focusing more on transit, that kind of seems like the plan here. But could Deer Valley build another parking lot if they wanted?
They can apply. They have some ideas of what they'd like to do to expand parking by about 80 additional spaces. There's some questions about how that zoning works out there in terms of their approval and how the original parking lots were approved. So the answer is generally yes, we would consider it, but there's some technical details before we can get to a real answer with the Planning Commission.
So this is going to be an ongoing conversation.
Oh, absolutely. I expect we're going to watch this one through the entire winter as we adjust transit and we adjust some of the other things. We'll get to a really good solution. If we're just kind of non-surgical on this and come in with a big axe, it's not going to work. I think we need to be careful and precise on how we handle this situation.
So let's move to another item on the agenda. The Park City Hospital is looking to amend its development agreement to expand its facilities by 50,000 square feet. That seems like a lot to me, but maybe I don't I don't have a real context for it.
50,000 square feet is a pretty good size number. It's right now proposed in a 20,000 square foot building and a 30,000 square foot building on top of what their current approval is. And I think if you listen to Park City Hospital, and I believe those guys understand healthcare pretty well, that the healthcare market has changed and they want to deliver some more ambulatory care services and not actually move people into the traditional hospital bed. So it's going to be outpatient services, ambulatory surgery, opportunities to do additional consulting with doctors without having to go through the whole healthcare situation and get admitted to the hospital. So we're looking at their development agreement and how it was approved back in the day when the annexation was achieved. They have some obligations to deliver some structured parking instead of the surface parking they have out there now. And we're taking a look at any changes to the affordable housing requirements because this would change their agreement. And so they would come under the current affordable housing guidelines with the city council.
Right. So if they're building these two new facilities, I mean, that would mean a lot more employees. So does that mean a lot more affordable housing?
Well, the rate of affordable housing is only about 20% of the employees. It's not 100% of the employees. So, yeah, they're gonna ask the Planning Commission for permission to add these two structures. They have completed a transportation study, so we know what happens to that traffic light and how that all works together. The commitment for housing we're working on right now with the Housing Authority and trying to figure out how to make that work. The hard discussion, I think, for the public is whether it makes sense to put housing for whether a nurse practitioner or a technician or a young doctor at that site where there are no services, right? There's no restaurant other than the hospital. There's no grocery store. There's no other stuff. Or whether it makes sense to integrate those folks into the community. So that's the planning conversation we're having right now.
So you mentioned annexation as part of this conversation, and you mentioned to me that the annexation policy plan will be coming up at an upcoming Planning Commission meeting. That's an ongoing process as well as the city makes some updates to its annexation expansion area. Where are you in that process?
Well, we're almost ready to go. I expect we're going to have a conversation with the Planning Commission on the 28th, which is the next meeting coming up on our new annexation policy plan. The city has never really been aggressive about trying to grow by annexation because that leads to sprawl and that leads to moving units all over the place. The current general plan requires that annexations take place for open space and for housing. And so our new plan is designed to allow for the annexation of our properties that we own at the north end of Round Valley, which is coming in as open space, allows for the potential annexation of Bonanza Flat, which is in Wasatch County, which is coming in as open space, and the potential annexation of the Clark Ranch, which is on both sides of 40, just slightly south of where Park City Heights is. So we need to have this plan in place before we can move the actual annexations forward. We're not making any land use decisions at this point. They're all coming in as open space. Potential future land uses are up to the Planning Commission. On the Richardson, we are including the Richardson Flat parcels. So roughly half of Richardson Flat is controlled by a development agreement with the city that no development can take place on the mining properties. There are some clauses inside that development agreement that would allow for some recreational activities in the park and ride. So we're looking at that, but the property owner needs to have a discussion with us. There's a couple other properties out there that are in the annexation policy agreement that would want to come to the city and talk to us versus dealing with the town of Hideout.
Right. And I know they were scheduled to, Hideout Town Council was scheduled to vote on their annexation policy plan maybe like last week. Did they end up going forward with that?
They did not. The Planning Commission is scheduled to deliver a recommendation to the council on the 15th now.
Okay.
And so a couple of my folks are attending those meetings and answering questions with respect to the city. But to be clear, the city's never been a real aggressive annexer. We're not trying to be all things to all people. We believe in redevelopment. We believe in infill. We don't believe in sprawl.
But it seems for the city-owned properties that are outside of the city boundaries, that's something that the city would have maybe wanted to pursue sooner.
Well, we did, back in 2017, move the action forward on Round Valley and on Clark Ranch. And there was some conversation, or there were some conversations about making sure the conservation easements were in place before we did the annexation, so that the entire community would know what that land use was going to be. Bonanza Flat was not part of that conversation because of some longer conversations with Wasatch County and making sure that their needs are accommodated inside of the property that we own. So in 2017, the Planning Commission asked us to kind of back away and take a hard look at the conservation easements on Clark and the Round Valley properties.
Bruce, I want to ask you about just one more thing.
Okay.
The Woodside Park Phase 2 housing development is going back to the Planning Commission on August 28th after the Board of Adjustment sent it back based on what they viewed as setback reductions that weren't warranted. But the Planning Commission already voted to approve those setback reductions. Is there any chance that it might turn out differently this time around?
Well, yes, of course. I mean, this is a public process and the public has an opportunity to comment, but for the most part, it went back to the Planning Commission to make sure the Planning Commission was absolutely clear on the findings to be consistent with the Land Management Code. So the Board of Adjustment did not feel like the findings that the Planning Commission made were clear enough and precise enough with the way the code requires it to be for additional architectural interest. So the design team has gone back, made some changes in order to illustrate how the plan that's being proposed is an improvement versus what would happen if we just had standard setbacks.
Okay. Well, Bruce, I think we have to leave it there. That's Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks. I'm amazed.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, everyone gets scared sometimes, but author, speaker, and U.S. Ski Hall of Fame inductee Kristen Ulmer argues we don't have to be afraid of fear. Kristen is this month's speaker at the PC Marks Lunch and Learn event, and she joins us now by phone to talk about fear and anxiety. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Emily. How are you?
Good. Sorry we're getting to you a little bit late. But let's talk about what you'll be talking about at this week's Lunch and Learn event. You became an expert on fear through real-world
Yep, I'm here.
I'm so sorry. I think we had like a little tiny power outage. So I'm glad to get you back on the phone. But you became an expert on fear through real-world experience. So I'm hoping you'll tell us how you became so familiar with it.
My training in fear is threefold. First of all, I was considered the best woman big mountain extreme skier in the world for 12 years. And I was also voted the most fearless woman athlete in North America. And so I have this really unique background of learning about what to do about fear through my ski career. And then as soon as I retired in 2003, I started studying a Zen approach to fear, which I voraciously studied for 15 years. And then now I've worked with tens of thousands of clients, helping them have a healthy relationship with fear. So what I have is 33 years of real world practical in the dirt experience. I didn't learn about this in college.
So, you know, doing extreme sports, that's one level of fear that you've encountered. But how did you kind of deal with that emotion, you know, when you were younger or in different, more mundane aspects of your life?
Well, I realize now you don't learn from experience. You learn from reflecting on the experience. And I didn't know what was happening back then during my ski career, but I do now. I did some things very distinctly right by fear and very distinctly wrong by fear. And the things that I did wrong caused a lot of problems for me, like injuries and burnout, PTSD, things like that. The things that we can do wrong by fear can cause anxiety disorders, panic attacks, depression. I didn't have those problems, but I've seen that in a lot of clients. Insomnia, things like that. And then the things that I did right by fear is what made me the best in the world at a very dangerous and difficult sport. And so I take that information, and that's what I transmit to my clients, and that's what I'm going to transmit tomorrow during the lunchtime learning.
So how is that different from what other people teach about fear, your approach to it?
Well, there are four basic ways to deal with fear, and I'm going to mention them from worst way to deal with fear to best. The worst way to deal with fear is resistance. And resistance comes in many forms, and I resisted fear during my ski career. I ignored it, but I see other people making themselves so busy they don't have to deal with it, or they're being in their heads all the time so they don't have to feel the feeling in their body. Resistance can be conquering and overcoming it, fighting it, rationalizing it away, replacing it with positivity, letting it go. Like, all of these things are actually taught by psychologists, self-help gurus, like resist, resist, resist. Fight a war against fear. See it as an enemy. And it causes a lot of problems to resist it. The second best, that's the worst way to deal with fear. And yet it's universally taught. The next level is you accept it, which is taught by a couple of progressive teachers, but you're still kind of passive and in your head about it. Like, we don't want to deal with our emotions intellectually. So acceptance is a step in the right direction, but we're still not there. So then there's embracing of fear, which is what I did during my ski career. And next thing you know, you're in your body, because fear is a feeling in your body. You're starting to deal with this emotion emotionally. And then the fourth level is you have intimacy with fear. And the intimacy with fear is what extreme sports athletes are capturing in their performance. And if you can learn how to do this, then you don't have any issues with fear. And fear is only an asset and an ally. And that's what we're going to explore tomorrow.
So like you mentioned, fear can kind of be tied with anxiety. And anxiety is often treated as a mental health disorder. You know, there are specific disorders under that umbrella. How do you address these health conditions through your take on fear?
I missed the last part of the question, but I will say that anxiety is fear. Fear is anxiety. We've taken to calling it anything but fear. Anxiety is a big word. Worry, nerves, butterflies are other names for fear. And so if you have an anxiety disorder or even a problem with anxiety, then that's a clear sign that you're not dealing with your fear in a day-to-day way.
So, Kristen, you'll be speaking at the Lunch and Learn event tomorrow. That's Wednesday, August 14th at noon at the PC Mark Party Room. This is free for people to attend. But just in case they can't make it, what is your simplest advice for dealing with fear in everyday situations?
The simplest way to deal with fear is learn how to have a healthy, inclusive relationship with it. If you're trying to do some form of what's called spiritual bypassing, like replace it with positivity or ignore it, it's the worst thing you can do with fear. Fear is such a huge part of our human experience. It's with us every single moment of every single day in nearly every single interaction we have. And if you don't have a healthy, honest, inclusive relationship with it, then you're going to have some problems. And you may not have problems today, but you will soon.
Okay, that's Kristen Ulmer. She'll be speaking tomorrow at the PC Marks Lunch and Learn event. Kristen, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, pleasure to be here. And if you can't make it, go to my website, kristenulmer.com, and take my fear and anxiety assessment. It's free. It'll give you a lot of information.
Thanks so much. We'll link to that on the web post at kpcw.org. On Saturday and Sunday, the Tour of Utah comes through town, and joining us with a preview of road closures and more information about the event is Park City Special Events Manager Jenny Dearson. Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning.
So this is a fun event, I imagine, and I know your plate is full of good events this season, but before we get to this weekend, what else is coming up this week?
So just on Thursday, we have the start of the Park City Baseball Classic. You'll see games going on around the school district and out at Quinns Junction, and I think a couple other locations in Summit County. That is our local Park City Baseball Club hosting a small tournament in town throughout the weekend. And then also, you can't forget, it's the Back Alley Bash that's on Town Lift this Friday. So of course, come out and support KPCW on Friday evening at that event. There's some great food and music there. And then also, just wanted to mention, on Saturday night, a concert up at Deer Valley. That's the Deer Valley Music Series. I do believe there's still tickets to that concert up there as well. But as you mentioned, the main event of the weekend is the Tour of Utah.
So that's a big event that's racing through Park City and Summit County this weekend. What kind of impacts should residents and guests prepare for?
So I think it's a really great event. It does showcase our entire state, actually, and the beauty specifically of Summit County as well. I think there's impacts on 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. The change this year is that the Canyons Village at Park City Mountain is hosting both a start and finish on Saturday. So out in the county around the Canyons area, as well as Kimball Junction, you will experience temporary road closures from about 10 in the morning until 7 p.m. And so just to make sure everyone knows what temporary road closures are, when the race does come through, the road will close to all traffic and transportation, including bus and transit and things like that. They are temporary in nature, so they may last 15 to 30 minutes, depending on how long it takes the race to go through. But then the roads will be released and traffic will flow again. So just be patient in and around the area. And again, on Saturday, it will really affect kind of the Canyons area and Kimball Junction. I do have a list of the roads that will be affected, but rather than read all those off, really the best place to go and look for information if you're wondering if your road is going to be impacted or you're trying to get to work or home is really tourofutah.com, and you can click on the stages of the race and see the race course for the times that will be affected. And then we're really excited to have the race come back on Sunday on Main Street. So again, the start and finish the race on Sunday is at the top of Main Street. And we have all sorts of great festivities on Upper Main Street, and we anticipate closures on Sunday between 11 a.m. and 5 p.m.
So there's been a really big push to use transit during this summer's events. Same thing for this one?
Yeah, same thing for this one. On Saturday, the best place to park if you are looking to go to the event is Canyons Resort or Ecker Hill and take the bus from Ecker Hill Park and Ride. And on Sunday for the championship stage, all of the resort partners have allowed parking at their resorts with increased transit as well as the school district. So there's lots of options for the final stage of the race. I do think it's important to mention that parking rates in China Bridge on Sunday are $20 flat rate fee. It's also important to note, if you do plan on parking in China Bridge, there is a closure of the garage between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock because both sides of the garage are on the race course. So if you are parking in the garage, that means you're going to hunker down and have some fun on Main Street while you watch the finish. So just a note there that's important to mention.
So how have we been doing this summer encouraging people to get on transit? Have we seen a lot of people riding the bus?
So Alfred gave me a great statistic just a little bit ago. We've seen double-digit increase month over month in people riding transit. I think it's important to talk about that is, you know, both due to events as well as just everyday ridership increasing. We continue to do everything we can to push people taking transit and listen to what the community is saying about the transit system and continue to get people to ride it.
I'm moving to a different topic now, but you're part of the city team that's working to address traffic and circulation in Old Town, something the city council will be looking at this Thursday. And, you know, this all plays into special events and traffic mitigation and management. So maybe you can kind of talk about how your special events team is playing into all of that and into that plan.
So I do think it's important to mention special events are different than year-round transportation. We do find opportunities through major special events like Tour of Utah or Arts Fest or Sundance and others to try things out. And so really that's where we've been helping kind of learn what to do around town. We do have a number of recommendations coming to City Council this coming Thursday. Specifically, we want to work with the transportation team and do a year-round study, really monitoring all of Old Town, not just specific locations like Main Street or Hillside or other areas, Park Avenue, but really taking a holistic view and also looking specifically for some drop and load zones on Main Street, perhaps for the shuttles and for-hire taxi companies to help with transportation on Main Street daily and year-round. When we're out there, we see a lot of those shuttles and taxis dropping off guests. And they're actually part of our transportation solution. They're bringing mass amounts of people, so 15 people per van to Main Street. So they're a lot kind of like our transit, and they're helping solve some of our transportation challenges.
That's sometimes more people that's on the bus when I ride the bus on the way in. But so looking ahead to Tour of Utah, we'll post some of those details on kpcw.org. But looking back really quickly at the Kimball Arts Festival, which just happened a couple of weeks ago, is that one of the biggest events of the year in Park City?
That is one of the biggest events of the year for us, and for, you know, it's a big event for the Kimball. I do want to congratulate them and all of their staff and their board on all of their work. I think I've mentioned before, I used to be on that team at the Kimball, and they do so much for our community year round with their free exhibitions and their educational classes. And I know that's a big event for them to pull off. Their team was great to work with. And I think, you know, also want to say thanks both for Tour of Utah and the Arts Festival. These types of events really take the entire community, so our resort partner, school district, so on and so forth, the county, all of that, to pull these off. It's an amazing thing.
You think it went well this year?
I do think it went really well. And we will come back for a debrief in the early fall for Arts Festival specifically.
Okay, Jenny Dearson, Special Events Manager with Park City. We'll post those details for Tour of Utah, and we're looking forward to the next time you're coming in. Miner's Day?
Yep, so back to school next week, and then in just a couple weeks, we have Miner's Day.
Okay, Jenny, thank you so much.
Thank you.